Hi, it's Hannah Gelbart here, and you're listening to What in the World from the BBC World Service. This is the podcast where we explain what's happening in the world, and Lizzo is a massive talking point right now. She's being sued by three of her former dancers over a number of different claims, including sexual harassment and fat shaming. We're going to come on to that in a bit. But first, we want to discuss something a little bit different, and I want to start by playing you this voice note.
Hello, my name is Bucky. I live in Surrey, British Columbia, Canada, and I love rotting in bed. Like, bed rotting is such a vibe. I honestly always tell people that if I didn't have to work, if I didn't leave the house, I would literally just rot in bed all day. Because why would I go enjoy the sun when I can just rot in bed?
So on TikTok, you might have seen videos of people like Bucky doing their favorite hobby, which is getting cozy in bed instead of leaving the house. It's something that has come to be known as bed rotting. And for some people, this is all about self-care and taking time for yourself. But what if the hours in bed turned into days, into weeks, into months, or even years? Now, that's what's happening to some people in South Korea. And for them, this isn't just duvet time. This is about retreating from the world. In fact, social isolation, or reclusion as it's called, is such a big problem that the government there recently announced an initiative to help. It's offering a monthly payment of around $500, and the idea is to help young recluses get back into society. So in this episode, we're asking what in the world is going on with recluses in South Korea. Now, one person who knows a lot about this is Hyun-Yung Kim. She's a BBC journalist in South Korea, and she's been talking to people who used to be recluses, including Yoo Seung-gyu, who didn't leave his room for five whole years. We're going to hear from him a little bit later, but first I wanted to ask Hyun-Yung all about how people live as a recluse. Hey, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, very, very good. So you've been speaking to Yoo Seung-gyu, who used to actually be a recluse himself. How long did he cut himself off for?
I think he started the reclusion when he was about 19 years old. He was in reclusion for 5 years. In Korea, you need to go to army if you're a man. So he needed to go to army even though he was in reclusion. 3 years before and then and after he came back, he did another 2 years. At first, he was living with his family, but then he even didn't want to meet his family. So he just isolated himself in his room. He only went out when all the family members sleep at night. Or he even told me like he pee or poo on inside his room because like, he didn't even want to go out.
And what about eating? What did he do for food?
When he needs to eat, like he sneak out at night and grab some food from the refrigerator or something like that. His room was full of trash and mess because he didn't feel like he needs to clean up.
What a way to live.
So that was, yeah, he couldn't even know if the season changes or not because he didn't open the window at all.
So what is it that can lead someone to cutting themselves off from the world like that for five whole years? Here's Yoo Seung-gyu.
I don't want to blame my parents, but I think my parents and society and my surroundings, they didn't let me talk about my worries. In reality, our family fought each other a lot. And my mum, she often faints from the stress. At the same time, when I was a kid, I really liked to play computer games and even did my own streaming. Today, you can call those people YouTubers or creators. But at that time, it was only considered a minor and not a proper thing.
So all he really wanted was to be a YouTuber, but he didn't feel supported by the people around him. Instead, he felt a bit judged.
When I turned 20, the more I did what I like, the more miserable I became. I couldn't talk about this, not even to my friends. Then one day, I decided that something was wrong with my life. I remember saying that to myself. After that day, I became a completely different person.
Now the government in South Korea is trying something a little bit different to help people out of reclusion. Back to Hyun-Yung Kim.
The reclusion problem was started to recognize by the society very recently in Korea. I think the Korean society didn't really care about those reclusive youth because the society, we tend to think that that was their problem, their own problem. These days, the Korean society started to feel that this is getting very serious. And now these days the government is trying to solve this problem.
As you say, the government is starting to do something. They've recently introduced a new measure, right? They're going to pay about $490 a month to help young people who are recluses to come out into society a bit more. How do you think it will work?
So this new initiative was the first initiative made by government. When I interviewed those interviewees, like those formal reclusive youth and all the support workers, they told me that they welcome this initiative because it's the sign of the recognition from the government of this problem. But they said just giving out the money won't solve the problem.
But what do you think people who are given this money, what's the idea? What are they meant to spend it on?
So there are several categories. The government can give money sometimes directly to the youth who apply for this program, but it's more like if you go to see a doctor and then you need to pay for this counseling fee or medical fees, then you pay first and then the government will compensate.
But it's not everything, right? It's not like, I don't know, a gym membership or anything like that.
No, there's a categories. And actually, if you apply for that and the government and the committee will first decide whether you are eligible for that.
South Korea can be very competitive. A lot of people want to get into the top universities and the top jobs. Is there something to do with the pressure that might be having such an impact on young people's lives that it's actually pushing them to hide away from society?
Yeah, it is. I think most of my interviewees told me it's because of the social pressure. They said there are so many competition in Korea, and then we have a kind of social standard or expectations that the young people should, for example, in university or get a job in certain age. For example, when you are 20, you must be in university. If you are 25, you must get a job. So they told me all those pressures make them feel very nervous and more anxious when they decided to come out from reclusion, because they told me they're already late. They feel like they just waste, 3 years or 5 years. And then they told me because the Korean society doesn't accept diversity. Mm-hmm. And this diversity is, not race or something like that. It's more the Korean society doesn't accept people who are off the beaten record. If you don't study and if you just do other thing and then Korean society think you are not following the proper path and you are being very weird and freak and, you're wasting your life. We have a culture of shame. So the families felt ashamed if their, kids are in reclusion.
Thanks so much, Yun Yung. Now let's talk about Lizzo. Three dancers who toured with her have filed a lawsuit against the singer, her production company, and her dance captain. The lawsuit says the dancers were exposed to an overtly sexual atmosphere that subjected them to harassment. One allegation includes fat shaming. Lizzo is known for celebrating her body and for self-love. And as we record this episode, she's yet to comment on the allegations. But it did make us think about what it feels like to be fat shamed. Now, in some cultures, being larger is considered a sign of wealth and health. But in many places, like in America, people are often judged for not being slim. Now, here's someone who has personal experience of this, James O'Hagan from Ireland. He told us a bit about what fat shaming feels like for him.
I have been sort of targeted as a result of my fatness countless times, more times than I can even remember. I was a fat child, and I have memories going back to as young as 7, 8, 9 of being sort of directly kind of considered an outsider as a result of the shape of my body. I can think and remember back to when I was in my early teens, sort of just walking down the road in a sunny seaside town here in Ireland, and a group of teenagers cycling around me on their bikes very intimidatingly and shouting at me to lose some weight and that I was this sort of grotesque fatso. And in, now, much work and many years later, I'm sort of like, what horrible people they are. But in that moment, that went right into the center of who I was. I felt like I was a failure, that I didn't deserve to exist, that I had no right to occupy the space that I was occupying, that I had failed, that I should be ashamed of myself. And that was so insidious and went into how I felt about myself for decades afterwards. For nearly 20 years after that, I continued to think that way about myself, that the only way I could achieve worth or value was through pursuit of weight loss. And it is so damaging when you're thinking about yourself in those terms. You see it every day when you're walking around in the world, sort of, you know, bigger people trying to make themselves as small as they can, trying to make occupy as little space as they can. Fat shaming, it's basically a natural byproduct of a world where we have one particular type of body that's idealized above all else, and one particular beauty standard, which is seen to be the only valid way a body can exist. Like most other forms of discrimination, it can really vary in severity. It can vary in how it's experienced by the individual. It starts usually with the likes of bullying in school, with concerned parents and teachers making an issue out of it, which draws more attention to the fact that this is a wrong way for a person to exist. And then the sort of stereotyping that comes along with it. So being lazy, being unfriendly, being unkind, seen as being the aggressor or the bully in some instances, which can lead then to people being thought of very negatively just sort of when they are seen as a fat person in the world. So when it comes to tips for avoiding fat shaming behavior, the first thing on that list is you don't need to point out when the person has lost weight. You don't need to point out when the person has put on weight. You don't know how a person relates to their body. People have incredibly complicated relationships with their body in all ways. And so mentioning how a particular dress makes a person look, or mentioning how, you know, sort of a particular t-shirt sits on someone, can be incredibly triggering. Even if it's said absolutely innocently and without any sort of intent to harm, it can really sort of sit with a person and make them feel negatively about themselves. Secondly, it would be, don't comment on what a person chooses to consume. Don't point out that a person should make a particular choice that you feel they should make as a result of your assessment of their health or wellness. Aside from that, the third thing is educate yourself about the experiences of fat people as they move through the world. It is so important to start understanding the ways in which our society is set up to exclude fat people so that we can all start calling them out, in the same way that many people have done around members of the queer community, in regards to the role of women in society. People have come together, allied together, to be able to sort of create that change. And we need to do that when it comes to the exclusion of fat people as well.
Also across this story is Esther Ogola. She works at the BBC Bureau in Nairobi. And here's what she told us about body image in Kenya.
I think the ideal body type in Kenya is that there's an appreciation for being curvy and being fleshy and being plus size. But usually with the younger generation, there's also the pop culture influence. So there's also a type of pressure to look like celebrities and entertainers. But then across the divide, as you grow older, there seems to be an appreciation of women just, you know, owning their plus size or their fleshy bodies. So it's usually like a two-sided coin. And, you know, as you know, the goalposts keep shifting. Fat shaming is an issue in Kenya. In fact, not even the former president of Kenya was immune to fat shaming. He was trolled on Twitter, after he photos of him, you know, appeared on social media having, you know, gained some weight. But on the flip side, a lot of people also came out to defend him. So it is an issue, but there's also a strong appreciation for people to actually just accept themselves and to also stay off other people's, you know, body image.
Thank you so much for listening. I'm Hannah Gelbart with What in the World. Me and the team are going to be here every single weekday, Monday to Friday. We're going to be explaining what's trending and so much more. So
please subscribe wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Share this episode with your friends.
Woo-hoo!
And tell us anything you want us to cover.
We'd love to hear your feedback, good or bad.
Hopefully good.
We're also on WhatsApp and you can find our number in the show notes.
Thanks again for listening to What in the World from the BBC World Service. Hope you can join us again for the next episode. Bye.
Bye. Bye.